And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to keep our eyes on what's been going on at the University of California. And we're going to keep you posted on what's going on. But we did want to make sure that we brought you information on a very important event with Derek Jensen interviewing visionaries. This is going to be a day-long event on Sunday, and it is entitled Earth at Risk. And you all know, if you listen to this broadcast, that this Earth is at risk. We've seen so many environmental disasters and what appeared to be natural environmental disasters coming from abuse of the climate. And there are many prices to pay. So this is an event that's going to feature Derek Jensen interviewing a number of different people, including, if I'm reading this right, Arundhati Roy, Chris Hedges, Thomas Lindsay, a whole bunch of other people. We've got a couple of them with us. We have Derek Jensen. We have Eric McBay. He's an activist farmer. And he's going to tell you more about what he does. And we also have Stephanie McMillan, and she will tell you a lot about what she does. Let us start with you, Derek Jensen. Thanks for your patience. There's been a lot going on in Berkeley. You have done extraordinary work. Your books are almost legendary. They mean a lot to a lot of people. But let me bring you in because we don't have a lot of time, and I want to get a sense of really what's going to happen on Sunday at this very special event.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me. And the event is going to be basically about what we can do to stop this culture from killing the planet. And it will be me talking to people who have devoted their lives to this. And it's not about how we can attempt to make minor changes around capitalism, but instead what it's like a doctor friend of mine says that the first step toward cure is proper diagnosis, and so it's people who have devoted their lives to trying to understand the pathology that is this culture and attempting to describe what we can do to actually stop this juggernaut while there's still something left on the planet.
In medical terms, I know you're not a physician, but how sick is the planet?
I would say, 90% of the large fish in the oceans are gone. I just read something a couple days ago that the oceans have already acidified to a degree that oysters can't reproduce, shellfish. I just read this this past week. And, of course, the article was mainly in terms of what this means for oyster farmers. But what this means for the real world is really extraordinary. I was just up in some old growth redwoods 2 days ago, and salmon are spawning here, and it was extraordinarily beautiful to see four salmon. And of course, when this culture arrived here, there were salmon so thick that people were afraid to put their boats in the water for fear they would capsize. So the salmon are still hanging on, but how much longer? I don't know. Things are very bad, and we need to acknowledge how bad they are before we can start actually doing what is appropriate. That's one of the things we're going to talk about too, is that so often so many environmental talks are really about hope, but what hope is really, if you get down to it, is a longing for a future condition over which you have no agency. You don't say, I hope that my room gets cleaned up. You do it. And so this is not about hope. It's about describing the circumstances and then doing something about it. You don't say, it's like a friend of mine, her brother was dying of cancer, and she said, do you mean I can't hope that he survives? I said, of course you can hope he survives, but what you can't do is stand there with the car keys in your hand and say, I hope you make it to the hospital. So it's about figuring out what we can do, what we can't do, and then doing everything we can and then more.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're speaking with Derek Jensen, author and of many books, and part of a special event on Sunday. We're going to give you that information in just a little bit, but I want to bring in a couple of participants. Eric McBay is in the studio. He's an author. He's a organic farmer, and How would you respond to the level of trouble that the planet is in? Where do you see this? How would you put this into terms that we can all get and react to?
Well, you know, I read this morning that the International Energy Agency, which is pretty conservative, said that we have 5 years to stop runaway global warming. That's the
5 years.
5 years. Now, runaway global warming is the point at which global warming becomes, you know, self-sustaining. So the ice caps melt and greenhouse gases frozen in the Arctic are released. Forests start to die from heat and pests, and they burn or release carbon. So at that point, it may not happen right away, but it will become essentially impossible to reverse global warming, and large parts of the planet will become uninhabitable. I mean, it'll be apocalyptic, really, even compared to the stats that Derek was already talking about, you know, with 90% of the fish being gone. And this is the International Energy Agency saying this. I mean, when they seem more alarmist and apocalyptic than a lot of the radical environmentalists I know, I get nervous. So it's extremely serious, and it's extremely urgent. I think what we have to remember, all kinds of activists, social justice activists, environmentalists, and so on, is that all of our struggles and all of our work depends on having a livable planet. You know, we can get actual political democracy, we can achieve economic justice, but none of that's going to work, and none of it's going to last in the long term if we can't protect the planet and the land that feeds us and gives us breathable air and everything we need to survive.
All right, let's bring another participant into this, Stephanie McMillan. She's a cartoonist, an editor, does a cartoon called Code Green. Stephanie McMillan, how would you characterize the situation? Why is it an emergency, and why are you going to be speaking with people on Sunday at Wheeler Hall, UC Berkeley, if in fact there isn't another police riot there?
Well, I do characterize it as an emergency, and I think it's time for everyone to step up and mobilize, do the maximum that they're able to do. Build the kinds of organizations we need, create a strategy that will actually work, and stop playing around with the limited options that are provided to us by the system itself. You know, the electing one politician over another when we all know that both of them stand for the same thing. You know, they are trying to keep the capitalist system going, and it's the capitalist system that is killing the planet, converting all of life into commodities. So that's what I'm going to be talking about there.
Well, Stephanie, along with Eric and also Derek Jensen, are going to be at the University of California on Sunday. It's an all-day event. It's quite affordable. You can check it out. I want to bring you back in, Derek Jensen. I guess they call you, it is said, the philosopher poet of the environmental movement. Apparently, the fact checkers and the people who are very good at gathering information and putting it together into books, like yourself, haven't been able to, I guess, really convince the overwhelming numbers of the people that this is the emergency that it is. Do we need to resort to poetry or music? How do we get the people's attention?
Yeah, poetry is a last resort. I think part of the difficulty is that we in this country, even for the most part, the fairly poor people in this country are still primarily the beneficiaries of this pyramid scheme called capitalism, and we are gaining at the expense of the poor the world over. The poor humans and the non-humans. And, you know, it's said that addicts don't often change until they hit bottom, but Lundy Bancroft had this really great book called Why Does He Do That? Inside the Mind of Angry and Controlling Men, talking about abusers. And abusers are often addicted to power. And he said one of the reasons that abusers don't change is because they're not the ones who hit bottom. Everybody else does. So right now, the oysters are hitting bottom, and the salmon are hitting bottom, and the Delta smelt are hitting bottom, and the farmers in India are hitting bottom, and the the Mekong Delta catfish are hitting bottom, and the humans who live off of the Mekong River catfish are hitting bottom because China, for electricity for China, they're going to put in 11 dams, I believe, on the Mekong and basically kill it. And the point is that one of the reasons it's hard to get, there's a great line by Upton Sinclair, it's hard to make a man understand something when his job depends on him not understanding it, which pretty much explains all of our political system here. And explains most of the corporate media, which, once again, thank you for doing the work you do. But anyway, I think that's one of the reasons we have a hard time. A lot of people have a hard time. I really enjoy speaking to indigenous peoples a lot, and I really enjoy speaking to poor people a lot, in part because it's a whole different conversation, because there's a level of privilege that that insulates all of us, and I am a person of privilege on a global scale. Remember the MRTA, the Tupacamaristas, Rebel Group in Peru, years ago said to me that, and this really, I was so silly up to this point, that he said, you know, you're actually extremely rich on a global scale because you've been taught how to write. And that really put it into context for me that I need to use that privilege in order to undercut all of this privilege we see around us. But the point is, I don't think that those in power are going to stop because we ask nicely, and I don't think that, you know, the capitalist in chief will act against capital. And
well, the capitalist in chief is becoming a cheerleader for more offshore oil drilling. We're watching the pipeline coming in from Canada. He hasn't taken any kind of strong stand against that. Apparently, he's going to try and wait until the election is over to screw the left, as he's been doing for the last 4 years.
Yeah, what a surprise.
Forgive me. So there's no hope because the corporate machine owns the politics. So where's the hope?
The hope, if we can use that word.
Forgive me. Pick the word and then tell me how.
It'll work for now. I'm not an anti-hope fascist. Okay. The hope for me comes in the grassroots activists who are doing something. You know, the big distinction is not between those who believe in the possibility of militant resistance and those who don't. The big difference is between those who do something and those who do nothing. And my hope comes from the people who are already putting their bodies and their lives on the line to defend the forests that they love and defend the rivers and to and also, you know, I'm going to be speaking at the Occupy Oakland in San Francisco on Saturday, and I mean, you know, no movement is perfect, but I just want to say that it does bring me some level of optimism or hope or cheer or something to actually see large numbers of people standing up against the machine and standing up against the whole corporate state. That brings me some measured optimism.